And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM, bringing you the sources you don't ordinarily get to hear in the corporate media. And I'm very pleased to go first to Dan Kovalik. And Dan, he is a senior counsel for the USW, the United Steelworkers, and he's also a member of the School of America's Watch. And if everything is going well, we should be interviewing him live in Honduras. Dan, are you with us right now?
I am indeed.
Great.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, and you sound like you're coming in pretty clearly there. I couldn't be happier. Now, I understand we're on a long-distance call, so there might be a bit of a delay when we talk. That can't be helped, and just have to bear with us there. But, I mean, you're in Honduras right now. That is very exciting, and I have to ask, how did you even get there? I mean, with all the turmoil, did you just fly on a plane to the capital and hop off?
Well, we couldn't fly to the capital. The airport had been closed since Sunday when President Zelaya, as you recall, tried to return to Honduras. He tried to fly into Tegucigalpa Airport, and he was prevented from doing so by the military. And there are about 250,000 protesters there supporting his return. At least one, maybe two of the protesters were killed by the military. In any case, after that incident in July, was prevented from returning, they just shut down the Tegucigalpa airport totally. There's been no air traffic in or out of Tegucigalpa between Sunday and today. And today they just started a couple airlines running. So we actually flew into another city called San Pedro Sul and drove 4 hours on a mountain highway to Tegucigalpa, which is where we are.
Wow. Well, I mean, I have to commend you for taking all this trouble so that you could bring the story to us back here in the United States and Canada. Now that you're there and you've told us what's happening in regard to the airport and the attempted return of the president, I mean, there must be, is it martial law on the streets? I know there's a curfew on. Have you experienced that curfew?
There is a curfew. Now it's 10 o'clock. It had been 6 o'clock, so they have it's a little later, but yeah, last night we had dinner pretty late, and we had to get back before the curfew at 10. They have threatened to shoot on-site people on the streets after 10 o'clock. Aside from that, though, I can't say I feel a heavy military presence. We did go to a major demonstration today. Those calling for the return of President Zelaya blocked the Pan-American Highway leading to Nicaragua. They blocked the entire highway to show their opposition to the coup. So we went up there, and it was a very actually festive crowd. People were seemed very happy, and folks selling drinks and food on the streets. It was a very nice crowd, and it went off peacefully and without incident.
You know, I was in Venezuela in 2006 for the World Social Forum. It was a very politically charged environment because of all the strong feelings happening. And, I mean, there was graffiti all over Caracas at the time. You could see a lot of pro-Chavez graffiti and some anti-Chavez graffiti. Have you seen indications in the street, like in graffiti or other ways, that tell you, like, that is there a charged, politically charged environment there?
The capital is filled with graffiti. And I would say my anecdotal evidence that I've seen is that almost all of it is anti-coup and pro-Zelaya. There's a lot of things denouncing what they call the golpistas, the coup leaders. There's graffiti which equates the coup president as Pinochet. They call him Pinocheletti after Micheletti, who has assumed power here. It's all over the capital. There is a very strong resistance here to the coup, what people here believe was a military coup, though the U.S. State Department has refused to officially call it that as yet. So, yeah, that is ubiquitous throughout the capital here.
So it's your impression that, I mean, large sectors of the ordinary population in Honduras are very upset about the coup and would probably prefer the return of the president.
That is my sense. And look, what I have heard, we've met with a number of social groups here, is that what happened on the Sunday, he was kidnapped from his house in the morning and sent to Costa Rica. that what he was trying to do, first of all, he really wasn't, though the papers haven't been clear about this, he really wasn't trying to have a referendum on whether he could run a second term. He was doing something short of that, really having a vote as to whether people wanted a referendum. So it would have been a multiple-step process. It was more like a poll he wanted to take through voting to see if people would want to vote later on a referendum to allow him to run to a second term, and that the sense was that he would win that straw vote, and the people who led the coup, two of the top military leaders who led the coup, by the way, who were trained at the School of the Americas in the United States, they were afraid of him winning that vote, and even though it was non-binding, but it would show this tremendous support he had. So that is what ended up leading to the coup.
Do you think that it was the referendum or the idea for a referendum itself that bothered the military, or do you think it was the whole process of engaging with referendums and more elections and assemblies and things like that that they found irksome?
Well, the folks here believe that the coup, in truth, was in the works for some time. That, you know, just a little background. This Manuel Zelaya, who was deposed last week, is an interesting guy. He's a member of the Conservative Party. He was elected as a conservative, and he was conservative. He's a rich rancher. But what happened midway through his term is that he started to, first of all, he wanted to work with the business elites to try to make improvements in Honduras. They had no interest in it. So he started to turn to the regular folk, the unions, the indigenous groups, and they were more than willing to help him with more innovative ways to improve this country, which is the second poorest in Central America and one of the poorest in the hemisphere. And he became radicalized and more progressive. And this upset the people in his own party. This upset the military. And he found himself at odds with just about all, you know, all the machines of government, but with large support from the poor, working-class people. He raised the minimum wage 60% to try to alleviate poverty here. And, again, that greatly incensed the elite here. He also joined ALBA, which is this alternative Latin American kind of monetary economic group here in Latin America, which is trying to break away from things like the IMF and the World Bank. Again, that upset the elite here. So people sensed, even before he was kidnapped on Sunday, June 28th, was that something was going to happen, that this was building over a period of months, and this kind of vote that he was trying to hold was basically the last straw for the elites here.
This is me setting my alarm bells off. They're ringing. I mean, we had covered events in Venezuela back during the coup there. And do you see similarities? Is this something that we should think about beyond Honduras? Like, is this an attempt at overthrowing another government that they're afraid is going to be like Chavez?
Well, you've really hit the nail on the head. We met with one of the leaders of the social groups here last night, a woman named Berta, a wonderful woman. She's the head of the committees for the detained and disappeared peoples in Honduras. There's many people who were disappeared during the most repressive years where peoples were taken from their homes, never seen again. And, you know, she kind of gave us an introduction to what was happening down here. And her statement was, this is just not a coup or an attack against Honduras. This is an attack against Latin America, and Honduras being seen as maybe the soft spot where they could get away with this type of thing. There is a fear amongst, you know, the elites and the militaries around Latin America that things are getting away from them, that the progressive forces are taking over. And I think that there was a thought that this would be ground zero for a greater kind of a rollback of progress throughout the hemisphere. And I think that's why myself and a lot of us came down here on this delegation, because we agree that that is what they're trying to do, and we want to stand with the people who are trying to defend progress, not only in Honduras, but in Latin America at large.
Well, I mean, this really interests me. We deal with a lot of labor issues on this program. You You believe that the Zelaya government was trying to engage with unions to move the country in a positive direction, I guess. Is that definitely going to change under this coup government?
There's no question. The unions are under attack now. Let me just say, all three union confederations here are united against the coup, which led the AFL-CIO and the steelworkers both to come out against the coup. Zelaya was working with the unions. He would have regular meetings where he'd sit with the union leaders. He'd sit with the indigenous leaders. He'd sit with other social leaders, and he would have real grassroots democracy where he would ask people what they thought and where they wanted to go with their country. And that's ending here. And, you know, there's warrants out for various social leaders' arrest. There's a great concern that if this coup is consolidated, the union leadership will be under serious attack.
Do you think this coup could become consolidated? Is this, like, do you think the people in Honduras are going to be able to overturn it? Are they going to need help from outside? Is that possible? Or how do you see things going in the next few weeks with the balance of forces as they are?
I think it's a close call. I mean, a lot of people here have expressed the opinion he will return, that he has to return because the people want him to return and they will shut this country down. Just like they shut down the highway today, like they really ended up shutting down the airport through the protests when Zelaya tried to return. And, you know, the EU has pulled out every ambassador from this country. The UN General Assembly has declared this a coup, and the first time in its history, by the way, declared a country a coup government and has called upon the immediate return of Zelaya. President Obama has been pretty forceful in his calls for Zelaya's return. He could be more forceful, I think, but folks here supporting Zelaya's return definitely see Obama as the hero in this story for what they see as support for Zelaya. And the opposition, for its part, sees Obama as the bad guy. And some of the right-wing Congress people supporting the coup have actually made comments about Obama publicly in a racially charged fashion. So it's quite interesting. I mean, so the long and short of it is the world diplomatic community is lined up against this coup government. The big problem, though, that could prevent a return is the fact that the coup government controls the military. And when you control the guns, you see what happened, that he couldn't even try. He couldn't even return to his own country this past Sunday. He couldn't even land in the airport. So, you know, it's kind of the world up against the very repressive military regime. So we'll see.
Yes. We should get back to the military. You picked my curiosity here because I've been watching U.S. news networks, CNN, and a few others, and there have been interviews with right-wing members of Congress and others who have, you know, who have said that, well, the coup, you know, it was not really a coup and it's a good thing and so on and so forth. So we can see how this has been treated in the media here. But in terms of what you're seeing on the ground, the people that you've been speaking with, the things you've been seeing in the streets, would you say that's been adequately represented in Western coverage?
I don't think so at all. I think they are. There's various media outlets that are showing almost some sympathy towards the coup. You know, I put it this way. Look, the arguments that Zelaya was somehow going against the Honduran Constitution are at best specious, okay? But even if we assumed he was somehow violating the Constitution, speaking as American, you could say that about almost every president, certainly within my memory, and George Bush probably primarily. No one called for the military to take him out of the White House and ship him to another country. If they thought he was violating the Constitution, they should have tried to impeach him through lawful means. The sense here is that they didn't have anything on him. There was they would have lost that battle legally. They didn't want to take him on in that type of legal struggle. So they used extra legal means, which was kidnapping a sitting president, a citizen of this country, and exiling him into another country. I mean, I just think the argument that somehow the coup leaders are protecting the Constitution, I just don't think can be taken seriously by anyone.
When you talk about the media and the coup and the Constitution, you've been hearing in some quarters in the U.S. that, well, Zelaya wanted to become president for life, and he was about to become president for life with this new measure, and if they didn't stop him, he would have been president for life. So is this about term limits, or did they have any grounds for this?
Well, again, that's the other ridiculous thing. He's only into his first term. I mean, at best, had he gone through this multi-step process of getting a referendum, that would have given him one more term, which, you know, many presidents in the U.S. have held, many prime ministers. I just, again, I don't see the argument. And frankly, even in the U.S., it wasn't till after Roosevelt was president, that is quite recently, that we even changed our Constitution to have term limits. So the other irony, of course, is that one of the best friends of both Canada and the U.S., President Uribe in Colombia, is in the process of changing the Constitution a second time so he can now run for a third term. So, whereas the Constitution originally only allowed him to have one term. And again, no one in the Canadian or U.S. government or media called for his ouster by the military because he was trying to do that. So I don't even see the argument, really.
Well, you know, we're skirting around a little bit the issue. We touched upon it, but we've gotten some static there. Are you with us there, Dan?
Excuse me? Hello?
Hi, Dan. Sorry, it sounds like we had some static there.
Yeah. I think it's all better now.
Okay. Well, School of America's Watch, you detail what has come from the people trained by the School of the Americas in Latin America. So you say that there's School of America graduates involved at high levels of this coup. So to what degree would you say that's the case? You know, what would you see as a U.S. role in this?
Well, again, the two top military leaders involved in the coup, leaders of the coup, were trained in the School of the Americas. The U.S. military has a very heavy presence here, 600 troops, at a base in which actually they're embedded with the Honduran military. In fact, we went to that base. We stopped there on the way to Tegucigalpa and witnessed the fact that the U.S. military is holed up in what is called the Honduran Air Force Base. And even now, when the Department of Defense claimed the U.S. military was not going to engage with the Honduran military after the coup. In fact, they're still embedded with Honduran troops there. We witnessed that when we visited. And in fact, one sergeant, U.S. sergeant, we met there when we asked him, well, what's the relationship with the Honduran military now after the coup? He said, it's stable. He said, nothing has changed. Those were his words. So, I mean, I think one has to be concerned when the top two military leaders were trained in the U.S. by the U.S. military at the School of the Americas. When we have this kind of close relationship, which is continuing to the present day, even after the coup, the question is, you know, how much support did that military get by way of active support or at least some sort of acquiescence by the U.S. military? The other interesting thing is that when President Zelaya was kidnapped, he was taken to that base that I just mentioned, where the U.S. and the Honduran troops are based, and he was flown from there to Costa Rica. So again, what is the complicity of the U.S. military even in his forced exile? I think those questions are out there.
Indeed. I mean, I've seen similar things happen in Latin America and the Caribbean. Would you say, I mean, could this be in any case a move backwards to that era in which, you know, militaries in Latin America would overthrow leaders if they became too uppity?
That's our fear. The fear is that if this is allowed to happen here, if Zelaya does not return, other militaries, for example, in Guatemala, where things are very tenuous there, may decide, oh, we can get away with this, and we don't want to go back there, because when that was happening, it wasn't just governments that were being overthrown. You know, hundreds of thousands of civilians were murdered in Central America in the 80s. Under these types of military regimes, so it's not something that we can tolerate.
Well, before we go, there's just one more question I wanted to ask, and because you're on the ground there, and you see what's going on, There's this talk here now that we're getting in the news that President Zelaya has been abandoned, you know, by his government or by his political party, that people in the legislatures and the Congress and so forth are just sort of turning their backs on him and are not supporting him. He's been cast loose. Is this happening there? What are you hearing?
Well, again, I think to a large extent that is true. I mean, the two main parties, which are very conservative, including his own, which he really himself moved away from by becoming more progressive, have turned their back on him. But the people who elected him and the people, the poor and working people here, who are by great proportions the greatest majority of people here, still support him. So he has popular support, though he does have a struggle with these folks in government who were unhappy. He was trying to take it in a more progressive and, frankly, more democratic direction.
I guess you'll be speaking with the social movements in the upcoming days, upcoming weeks, meeting with unions. If they have some kind of plan or program to get him back, that would be great. Yeah, I mean, is there anything else you'd like to say just about what people might be doing to mobilize or what's happening right now?
Well, actually, in terms of Canada, actually the worst statement I saw from a world leader was from the Canadian Prime Minister, who at the OAS urged Zelaya to maybe hold off on trying to return. So I think, you know, it's good to keep pressure on your prime minister to hold this coup government accountable and to unequivocally call for the return of President Zelaya. I think that would be a great thing for Canadians to do.
Okay, well, people heard that. That's good. Well, I guess for School of the Americas Watch, if we want to catch articles coming from Honduras, perhaps something that you might write eventually, what's the website address people can check for that?
I'm just trying to remember the website for SOA Watch. I believe it is soawatch.org. If for some reason I got that wrong, you could always Google SOA Watch. I also write for the Huffington Post. My name is Dan Kovalik, and you will find some articles up there pretty soon I'm going to write about Honduras.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Well, again, Dan, thanks for taking the time. And you're the only people, School of the Americas Watch and a few others, where we can get this kind of information and bring it to Canada. So I'd just like to say I really appreciate your being there and enabling us to get this perspective out there.
And I appreciate having the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And see
you later.
Take care. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.